All right. And a one, and a two, and welcome to the Tales from the Long Box podcast. This is episode 155, spotlight on Marvel Comics X-Force number 1, circa 1991. Or, alternate title, Man, Those Shoulder Pads Are Big. I am Chris Mosby.
I am Caleb Gerard.
And I am Murray Fox. Everything's big. Everything.
Okay.
Oh, agreed.
Well, now, isn't that interesting?
The bodies are big and the heads are small.
Yeah, this is true. Yeah. They are very small, aren't they? Yeah. You know, I never did read this book except for when it crossed over.
Really?
No, I have the I got number ones. I think I've sold them since then. But everybody's squinting.
And you got those funky face helmets.
Yeah. Yeah. That's, okay, well, let's...
That's a look.
That is a look. Yeah, I did hunt down the first 15 issues of it, though.
Really?
Yeah, I was looking for the number one. It was that before, you know, Caleb helped us.
Now,
for podcast purposes only.
Now, be aware that this is not the X-Force that was the World War II Chinese military division assigned to U.S. Army General Sitwell.
Oh, okay. Well, that's good to know.
Because if you go to Wikipedia and you type X space force, you get a World War II Chinese military division. You have to put the X dash force to get this.
I see. Okay.
Just a warning to all those who think, oh, I'm going to – never mind.
No, that was fun. Well, I mean, if that's what this was – you know, I didn't know the Chinese. I didn't think the Chinese liked Indian, you know, American, Native Americans. So, you know.
Yeah. No. Different Indians. But okay. Indian dot.
So I'm sitting here and I'm looking at the double page, you know, wraparound cover here at Liefeld, and I do believe the quote what Murray was Liefeld at his prime. I think is what Murray had said earlier. Maybe, you know, back when this was new, it looked cool, but right now, it's just like, yeah, this is the 90s, man.
So Murray, before you get into this, can I tell a quick Rob Liefeld story?
Oh, yeah, go ahead, man.
Okay, so pre-Hawk and Dove days, I mean, this is going back ancient history. I was at a incredibly small comic convention in Claremont, California. This was, you know, there were more people sitting at the tables than were actually shopping at this comic convention. And there was this kid there.
That's
right. There was this kid there who was showing the pages that he drew. He worked at a local comic book store, south of Claremont. And, I don't remember what city it was. I want to say Manhattan Beach or something like that in California. And, his stuff looked amazing. I kid you not. This art was amazing. I bought a page that he had done some tryout work for DC, and he had done some stuff for Justice League, and it was abso-frickin' amazing. And it turned out it was Rob Liefeld. And many years later, I was at a comic book convention, San Diego Comic Con, in fact, and this was after he had broken out at Marvel doing this stuff, New Mutants, and then X-Force. And I happened to have that page with me because I had never gotten it signed.
Mm-hmm.
When I bought it from him, it was just a stupid thing.
Yeah.
And I pulled it out and I said, hey, can you sign this? And he denied that it was his.
Oh, my God. Oh, that's hilarious.
I ultimately just gave away the page to someone because I was incredibly disgusted with that behavior. But
yeah, I'm not surprised, unfortunately.
This was at the height of their money making and popularity, the just pre-image time. So
Yeah, let's see, first time it was like 96 before 95, 96 before Chicago got bought out by Wizards, Chicago Comic Con. Well, the first one. And, yeah, I remember I didn't do it, but my friend I was with, we waited in line for, you know, I sat there and just took pictures of people, but he waited in line for like 3 hours just to get, you know, his autograph on some stuff. And he was, that was interesting.
Anyhow.
Yep. So, did anybody
didn't recognize the art?
Hmm?
Like, did he not recognize it, or did he just not want to own up to it?
He didn't want to own up to it. I was like, yo, you don't remember? We were, you know, I was in Claremont up outside of L.A. You were sitting at this little table. He's like, no, that wasn't me. You know, I'm like, holy.
Wow.
Crap basket. And I did not push that hard. I was, because I was just like, you know what, this is not worth it. I was,
yeah.
I had already reached that level of maturity in my life that it just wasn't. You know, there was an extent to how far I would go with this stuff, and I was slightly less mature fanboy. I probably would have raised a stink or something, but
yeah,
it wasn't. Wow. No, he again. This was unpublished. It was never going to be published, and
mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was cool. It was good. This was. I mean, he was.
That's sad, dude.
It was really awesome stuff. It was, again, when people were very impressed with his work, when there was the ridicule level was non-existent.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I mean, I don't know.
Anyhow, I don't want to spare the guy.
The ridicule he gets, he's done to himself, in my opinion.
Sure.
But you know, whatever. Do we do a quick little background on this? I'll read it real quick out of Wikipedia. X-Force, Volume 1, 1991 to 2001. The Liefeld period, according on here in the publication history. X-Force was created by illustrator Rob Liefeld. Is it Liefeld or Liefeld? Liefeld, okay. After he started penciling the New Mutants Volume 1 comic book in 1989 with number 86, the popularity of Liefeld's art led him to taking over the writing and drawing duties on the book, which allowed him to introduce Cable and several other new hard-edged characters in 1990 and 91, which is kind of what DC's doing right now. New 52, you know, just saying. With help from writer Fabian Nicasia, I think that's how you say that, provided dialogue for Liefeld's plots. Liefeld transformed the New Mutants into X-Force and New Mutants Volume 1, number 100, the book's final issue. Liefeld and Nicasia launched X-Force Volume 1 in August of 1991. Rob Liefeld obtained a name for the series from an unknown artist at a convention a few months prior to release with the aid of multiple variant polybag cards. Oh, yeah, I had every one of those, too, I'm sure. That's when the polybag crap started. Oh, God, what a terrible, terrible part of comic book history that was with those cards. Oh, they're all going to be worth money. No, no, they're not. Just a little 1991, Chris, listen, those aren't going to be worth a damn. Anyway, let's see. The book sold a record 5 million copies and remains the second highest selling American comic book of all time. I ain't got to give him something that. Surpassed only by Jim Lee's X-Men book that same summer with 8 million copies. That's right. They had like 5 different covers or something. I still have at least one of those. Original lineup of them included Boom Boom, Cable, Cannonball, Domino, Feral, Shatterstar, and Warpath. In later issues, X-Force's roster would include Siren, Richter, and Sunspot. Main opponents of X-Force during its first year was a terrorist mutant liberation front led by Strife, mass mutant with a mysterious link to Cable. Every early issues also featured the wisecracking mercenary Deadpool, the immortal Externals, and a new version of the Brotherhood of Evil Mutants. Propelled by Liefeld's art, X-Force became one of Marvel's best-selling comic books immediately after its debut. The series rivaled Amazing Spider-Man and Uncanny X-Men in popularity with the adolescent demographic. Intent. Anyway, Toy Biz responded to X-Force's popularity by introducing an X-Force action figure line alongside its X-Men action figure line. Liefeld illustrated the series up to number 9 and stopped plotting it after 12, as Liefeld had become increasingly frustrated that he did not own the characters he created and that his art was being used on a variety of merchandise while he received little royalties. Along with 6 other popular Marvel artists, Liefeld left Marvel Comics in 1992 to form Image Comics. And this is what started it all.
So. Cool. I'm just reading down here. It's cool. I mean, they've got Greg Capullo was on this, Tony Daniel. I mean, we've got...
Yeah, I had no idea. I thought he always did Spawn, but yeah, I didn't know Tony Daniel had done anything here either. But yeah.
Jim Chung, John Francis Moore worked on this, Peter Milligan, and Mike Allred when they did the Ecstatic stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I never read any of that for sure.
I think that's the only X-Force I read.
Wow, and Kyle and Yost were on it with Clayton Crane doing art. I didn't know that. I might look up that one.
Mm-hmm.
Anyhow, sorry.
No, that's cool, man.
All right, so Murray has graciously volunteered to be our tour guide.
Is that what it was?
Totally. I've read none of these guys. I have no clue.
I've read this before because, of course, when this came out, I got had to get every single issue that had all the different cards in it and then another one to open and read because the ones in the poly bags, they're going to be worth more.
Yeah, I somehow missed all of that. I didn't... what was going on in DC at that time? Because that's where I was.
That's
91?
91. What was going on in 91? It's a good question.
It's been the 5-year later Legion.
Yeah, probably.
Like right middle of the run.
Let me go back here.
Starman, maybe?
That early?
91? I'm trying to think.
I'm looking at dates.
Trying to place where I was university-wise. Oh, no, it wouldn't have been because that was Zero Hour stuff. Zero Hour came later. So not Starman. I don't know.
Angel and Ape was out that year.
Okay. Oh. August, Comic Book Database, August 1991. Here we
go. OMAC, Volume 2.
Let's see. Adventures of Superman, number 481. What's going on in there?
Oh, here's one. Oh, you're going to like this because they're just coming out with the latest volume of it. The first volume of Legion of Superheroes Archives came out that year.
Oh, wow. Okay. So there you go.
That's cool.
I didn't get that till years later. Deathstroke the Terminator, number 1.
Ooh, no, I didn't get that.
Yeah.
You know, I think I was through my number 1 phase by the time this stuff hit.
Yeah, huh. I'm pretty sure I had that.
Hawk and Dove, Volume 3. Justice Society of America, there. Volume 1. That would have been the Parabek.
Mm-hmm.
That I would have been getting.
Oh, the Fly, Volume 2. That's when they were doing those Impact comics. Remember that?
No.
The Red Circle?
Nope.
Stuff?
Yeah.
Yeah, I got all those.
Oh.
War of the Gods?
Oh.
War of the
Gods! That's what I would have been reading.
Oh, mm-hmm. God, that was terrible.
Oh, yeah, Books of Magic. The first volume.
Yeah. Emerald Dawn 2, Volume 1 had come out.
No, I would have skipped that.
I think I've got that somewhere. The first DC Marvel Crossover Classics, Volume 1 trade came
all right.
out then.
We're just putting off that episode.
Yeah, we are. Go ahead.
Yeah, okay, go. What better was coming out at this? Oh, Holy Terror was out, but it didn't
come out. Oh, really?
Alrighty, so we got a cover. We feature all the characters.
Captain Shoulder Pads, I mean, sorry.
Big Shoulder Pads, lots of scratchy lines.
Oh, yeah.
Even their faces are really scratchy.
Yeah.
Poor guys, they've been put through a ringer.
Yeah, their eyes are like, you know, little slits is all.
Yeah.
I can see.
And they're all wearing, like, hoodies without the hoodie. Like, they've got the... Cannonball's got these little... Are they pigtails?
No, that's one of them old-time aviator helmets with goggles.
It's and the aviator helmet without the actual head covering part.
Yes, exactly.
There was I don't know if you recall, there was an X-Men annual that Arthur Adams drew, where he redesigned all the costumes for New Mutants. and Cannonball, he gave Cannonball this really cool aviator helmet look, and this is clearly aping on that.
Seems like I remember that, yeah.
Now, I'm assuming all these characters had been introduced prior to X-Force, like they were just carrying over.
Yeah, because New Mutants number 100 went directly into this, if I understand correctly.
Okay, because this issue doesn't really do a great job of explaining who everybody is. Mm-hmm. I mean, you kind of get some of their relationships and stuff, but
yeah.
If you don't know who they are...
And I noticed Cable has got some kind of thing right under his neck. Maybe it's like one of those St. Bernards for a rescue dog. He's probably got liquor in there, maybe, with the X on it. You see that?
Yeah. Yes, well...
What the hell is that? Anyway, go on.
He's a big boy. If he gets lost, he needs something.
Yeah, that's true.
Alrighty, so we start off in the Antarctic, and the team has been brought there to find, I guess, the MILFs.
Not the MILFs you're thinking of, but yes.
The MLFs, the Mutant Liberation Front.
Oh, okay.
Which is, I guess...
That's a whole other book you're talking about.
That's... The Mutant Liberation Front is, I guess, bad. Liberating mutants is
well, bad. Well, it's how they go about it.
Okay.
Is the problem.
Okay. Well, that would have been nice to know, but, you know, whatever. They're the bad guys.
Yeah.
The MLFs. The MILFs. That just cracked me up every time they said the MILFs.
Oh.
All right. So they're doing their little sensor sketches. They're sensing where the team is, and they figure out they're right underneath the snow.
Infinity Gauntlet number 2 came out this same month.
Today, the terrorist actions of the Mutant Liberation Front come to an end!
Yeah, now they've given away their location to the enemy now.
That's right. Cable is intense.
Yes, he is.
An intense panel.
So it's going to come to an end. Then we get a like 2-page spread.
Yeah, that reminds me of issue of New Teen Titans where they go into one of the Bloodhound's strongholds. It looks just like that.
Did you read the credits box, Murray?
No, I'm just getting there now. It's Rob Liefeld.
Everything but.
But.
That's awesome.
Fabian Nicieza does the words. Chris Eliopoulos does the letters. Brad Van Catt is on colors. Bob Harris is Baggy Eyes, which is, I guess, the editor. And Tom DeFalco is the Baggy Boss, the editor-in-chief.
Wow.
I didn't realize Chris Eliopoulos had been around for so long. I mean, I think of him more recent, so.
No idea.
Yeah. So we get introduced to all the characters. They get like a little info box just with their names. Cannonball, I know. Warpath, I don't know. I'm guessing he's maybe a brother of that dude who got killed off in the first X-Men book there.
Yes, sir.
Cool. Feral, is that supposed to be...
That's Wolfsbane.
No, it's not.
Oh, it's not?
No.
Oh, that was totally different character?
Yes.
Huh. I'll be damned.
So New Mutants had two werecat creatures in their history?
Wow. For a few minutes, yes, they did.
Okay. Okay. So Feral is not that other person. She's got wild hair. They all have like sticky up hair, like hair that stands up.
Huh.
They put in product before they go to war.
They really do. Like she needs a ton of mousse.
Yes.
Wow. So they go in, they go fighting. Shatterstar, don't know who he is. Doesn't sound like he's a mutant, though. It sounds like he's some alien dimension hopping.
Shatterstar is from Longshot's universe, and I believe they established later on that that's Dazzler's and Longshot's son.
Yes, that's their gay son.
Yes, that's correct. Him and Richter are together now, I believe.
Yes.
Richter.
Yes, he comes in later.
That name just sounds dirty.
Well, he makes earthquakes, I think. Something like that.
But again, the controversy regarding Shatterstar and Richter's sexuality was completely put to rest by Peter David, so.
Yeah. Yeah, because Shatter, I remember he'd come back and then He just walked up to him and gave him a big smoochie, if that's what I remember what happened.
Anyhow.
So, did Liefeld just kind of hint at it in the...
I think that was after...
Yeah, later in the series, yeah.
Or was he long gone by the time they introduced it?
He left for a while.
Okay. Alrighty. So, they're all jumping around. Cannonball's shooting around.
Domino is jumping around doing whatever she does. Cable's shooting things. Starstar's cutting things.
Oh.
Boom Boom is
getting quiet,
around.
Murray. Oh, okay.
Murray, you got your shirt on your face?
Whoa, 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 whoa. No.
There you go.
Boom Boom is running around in red and pink, doing whatever she does.
Throws little bombs.
Time bombs, it sounds like, but I don't know what it means. All right, so they are fighting, and Cannonball says they're just taking on the grunts, and Cable says, I know, Sam, this is the MILF's cannon fodder.
You're enjoying it, aren't you?
I totally am.
I am now, too. Thank you.
Domino kicks someone in the head with her pointy foot, and Shatterstar is like using his big pointy knives, chopping people up. Maybe he doesn't chop people up. He wants to, but he's not going to. Anyway, he's all about the battle. And Boom 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 starts throwing time bombs, which I don't know. I guess they stop time, freeze time.
No, they explode.
Oh, like it's a time bomb. Like it's got nothing to do with time. It's just a time bomb.
She makes this little thing energy and decides how long before it explodes and then throws it.
Oh, I totally clued out on what she did. Mm-hmm. So she's just throwing bombs around. Gotcha.
Yep. She's a grenade launcher.
She was actually introduced in Secret Wars 2.
I seem to remember that.
She's got a cool name. Boom Boom. Boom Boom.
Created by
just see her like in a leather jacket. Yep. She'd be great with the Fonz. Boom Boom and the Fonz.
Boom Boom and the Fonz. That sounds like a new limited series by IDW.
Totally. I would buy that one.
Hmm.
All right. And then Thunderbird, who's not Thunderbird, Warpath, I guess, starts stomping, throwing things around. He's the resident strong guy, I guess.
Yeah.
And Feral is on people, rip people's tongues out because she's wild. She's wild, man. And then we get introduced to...
I didn't know Strife came along that early. I'd forgotten that.
Well, we haven't been introduced to him yet, but we get introduced to some...
Sorry, I'm ahead of you.
Bad guys. Forearm, who has four arms. Kamikaze, who, I don't know, flies around. Wildside, who's like Feral, but a boy, maybe?
Pretty much, yeah.
And Reaper, who has white skin and...
He carries a scythe.
Scythe, yeah.
I'm sure he has some kind of mutant power, but I wouldn't know what it was.
Yeah, well, I would guess these guys are mutants, right? If they're the Mutant Liberation Front, so... Yep. His mutant powers that he had to turn white, the poor thing. He will not get to tan. He will look terrible on the beach.
That's probably true.
That's sad. Yeah, that is sad.
It is.
Alrighty, so they start to fight, and they decide to take on whoever they're taking on. So Reaper is taking on Shatterstar, and we get to play buffoon, come to die. And that's the good guy. The killing game is best left to those willing to kill, Shatterstar. You doubt my honor as a warrior. This is your second mistake, Reaper. And then he does a little choppity-chop and chops off his hand. Wow, it is not even 2014. Jeff Johns hasn't even been born yet.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. It doesn't appear to bother him, though.
Well, he's a
like,
warrior
he's
born.
Lost his hand. I guess, however, it's still, you know, lost a hand.
Yeah.
You won't kill
flesh
me.
Wound. It's only a flesh wound.
It's a big flesh wound. Woog. It's
come
not
back
guilty.
Here!
So, while he's hacking hands off, they, then he gives him a kick to the chest. And he goes down.
Not because he lost his hand, but because he's been kicked in the chest. Wow, he's tough.
He's a Reaper.
I guess so. Forearm is giving Cable a big hug. That's kind of cool. He can hug him and then still pound on him. Use two arms to hug and two arms to pound. That's big. Cable says you're getting stronger every time we meet. Forearm kind of reminds me of someone on my team. The boy keeps getting stronger and stronger. And I guess he's talking about Warpath, because Warpath comes up in the background and does a big kapow and sends Forearm flying through the air.
That is a damn big kapow, isn't it?
It mm-hmm. is. A full page kapow.
And Cable says, kaboom! Oh, sorry.
None of this matters. We are taking as many pieces as they offer, but we have to nail the king. And that brings us to... we meet Strife. Strife is a dude, yes?
Yeah.
Okay. A dude with big breasts and a tiny little waist.
Doesn't he remind you, his design remind you of that character from Battle of the Planets? Or G-Force or whatever it was?
Oh, yeah, 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 yeah. I know exactly what you're talking about. Ooh.
Yeah. What was his name?
Bad guy from Battle of the Planets. I don't know. But Wikipedia will say. Come on, I will figure it out.
He kind of does. Yeah, yeah, yeah. He's got to wear a massive helmet, like with three kind of blades on each side of it. And he's got spikes all over his body. And he's posing something wicked, like he's taking a villain pose there.
Yeah.
We have to nail Strife, says Cable.
Looks like a Captain Morgan pose to me.
Strife says, you do, Cable. Then he underling Thumbelina. Thumbelina, contact Zero, begin teleportation of the remaining MILF members to a safer location. And Thumbelina is tiny. I can't tell how tiny it is. She's sort of short and squat and chubby.
That's a woman?
Yes.
Oh, my good lord, yeah, it is.
I mean, she's definitely got breasts. And
yeah, yeah. Zoom in, I can see that, yeah.
I don't think that's what Hans Christian Andersen had in mind, but that's just me.
Yeah, I agree with you.
Yeah, now Liefeld does a great job of hiding the hands on this page. Everyone has got their little hands in fists, so you don't have to see. They look like little...
The last one he showed got cut off, so...
Yeah, that's true. But I mean, that was a hand. Like, props to him. Like, he gets, you know, you got the fingers flying out of that page. It's even like... flying right at you. You got four fingers and a thumb. And
mm-hmm.
He can do fingers, apparently. Forearm, he's got to do, like, four of them at one time. He can do fingers. He can do hands.
They look like they're having fits. They're having epileptic fits, and they're all...
This page, however, the hands are pretty much hidden, and the feet are just kind of stumps. But they're there. They're not hidden. They actually have feet.
Okay, what page are we on? I'll get lost here.
I am still on the page introducing Strife and...
Okay, I am on the right page then.
Chubbo little Thumbelina. Alrighty. So, Strife... What's that?
Nothing, I'm just...
Strife wants to teleport all the members to safety, and Thumbelina asked about the four actually in combat right now, and he says, well, they're lost to us. We'll lose some fingers in order to save the whole hand. No. Computer. Failsafe override. Access code Nathan 000. Activate self-destruct sequence now. And he walks off.
There's a hint about Strife right there.
Yes, Nathan 000. That's an important name in X-Men history.
Now I'm not certain if at this point sort of like Chris, I'm not 100% up on my Cable.
Well, if I remember correctly,
I don't know if they've named him at this point or not, or whether they've established that who he...
Oh yeah, that's true. They might not have.
No, just as an aside.
We will see. We will see. So the countdown is counting down, and Feral is jumping wild and crazy onto Wildside, and they're scratching and cutting at each other and making terrible jokes. Yo, Wildside, you scratch my back, I'll scratch yours.
Oh, boy.
While she's gouging him to pieces. Ooh, promises, promises. Must be my animal magnetism. Ugh. Oh. Kitty cat's perfectly prepared to fight, huh? Oh, and purr is spelled purr, purr.
Yeah.
Like.
Nice, nice humor there.
They continue to fight and have some lovely... And then she's, like, grabbing at his mouth and, like, yanking it open, something wicked. What's the matter? Cat got your tongue? Oh, yeah, she does.
Like, she might have broke his... Yeah, she broke his jaw.
She broke his jaw. Like, ouch.
Well, just a couple pages earlier, she was threatening to rip out someone's tongue, so...
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, she's making a good go of it here. I'll come around to hear what you have to say real soon.
I'm wondering if part of their mutant powers is to have big triangle-shaped hair. Because they look like they might be related, if that's the case.
Yeah. Totally. Mm-hmm. Totally. So, Cable comes up and asks if she killed him, and she says, no, but if you give me a minute...
Yeah.
Oh, what?
You just noticed, I was just thinking, he's concerned that she breaks his jaw and that he might have killed her, that she might have killed him, but just a couple pages before, one of his teammates cut someone's arm off.
Yeah.
No concern about the guy bleeding to death in the corner.
Not at that particular time.
No.
Yes, apparently not.
He tells her that they can only kill in self-defense, not for sport.
Oh, well, and, that's much better.
She says, I walk away today, and that's one more person who could nail me tomorrow. And before they can continue their debate, the whole place starts to rumble and fall apart. Because, of course, you know, self-destruct sequence and stuff. The Zero character appears, and... he's like a white... He almost looks like the Silver Surfer without a face. Mm. Like, he's all white. He's got a couple of circles on his face and on his chest. Because he's named Zero. And he pops out of a little circle in the air. He grabs...
That guy, I don't remember Wildstar,
throws him into the circle, and they pop away. They port away. Well, it doesn't sound like he's got much of a personality yet. It's kind of quiet.
Now see, okay, all right, go ahead.
That's it. The Shatterstar says they're retreating like little whipped pups. There has to be more to it than just that. And that is when Strife shows up. And Cable, after just telling them, we're only going to kill in self-defense.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. You're dead, and then he starts shooting the guy.
I know. Let his hands and start shooting like crazy. Bam, 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 bam. You're dead. End of story.
Oh, and there's
welcome
a...
Welcome to self-defense.
Yeah. I think not Nathan.
And, yeah, Strix, not Nathan or whatever it is you're calling yourself this time. I think not. So I guess people know that Cable is supposed to be Nathan, son of...
Oh, they haven't gone that far with it at this point.
Just know his name is Nathan?
Yeah.
Hmm. Interesting.
Oh, he might have told somebody that, but I have no idea.
Okay. Well, either way, while he's shooting, his girl pops up and pushes Strife into the hole and zaps away. I'm not even sure why Strife appeared there if he was only going to get teleported away when he could have just not appeared at all and ran away, but.
I have no idea.
Then we wouldn't have gotten guns, so...
Yeah.
Anyway, Cable says he got away. Stab his eyes. He got away again.
Stab his eyes.
Oh, that's...
Interesting, isn't it?
That's serious. Let me see what's going on here. Something happens to Forearms. He gets pooped. Maybe
Not pooped. Foomed.
Sorry,
Boomp.
Oh, yeah.
It's boomped.
It's a special kind.
Looks like Domino shoots him.
It's a pillow.
It's a pillow gun. It's a pretty
heavy. Yeah, that's it. Poof, poof.
Alrighty, so Domino says, this place has fallen apart faster than our battle plan. And Boom Boom is like, the whole joint's rocking, boss. Oh, dear. Multiple charges are throughout the complex. The self-destruct system must have been activated. Scoutcraft 1 locking onto our coordinates. Body slide by 6. Shin. Off they go into there.
He didn't say energize.
Yeah. So then they're in their ship, and they are flying away. And they're just kind of questioning the whole point of what they were doing. This is what we were planning for. Seemed kind of simple for 6 weeks of training, says Cannonball. And Warpath is saying, it still goes down in the wind column for camps. And Boom Boom says, well, they're a little more. What about the kind of fashion statement we make? That can't for shit, right? And Cable is like,
wow.
But he got away again. Boom, boom, boom. So then we have like an actual subplot. We get to meet Roberto da Costa, I think, who is Sunspot from the old New Mutants. And him and a dude named Gideon.
Yeah. I don't remember.
Are fighting robots, and while they're they're robots, and while they're fighting the robots, they are talking about how Roberto has become this amazing businessman under the mentorship of Gabriel. So not only is he an excellent robot fighter, he's also apparently an amazing businessman.
Well, why do the skills have to be exclusive?
Well, that's true. It's good to be diverse. It's good to have something to fall back on if the superhero thing doesn't work out.
That's right. Well, you know, and he earned the money the old-fashioned way. He inherited it.
He inherited it from his daddy the mobster.
Yes.
Alrighty, so while they're planning their next business move, they've decided they're going to buy out some company, I think, the Jankos company. That's their plan. They're going to buy them out, bleed them to death, and Gabriel's pretty happy about that.
I don't understand why, if they're fighting in private, he has to wear a mask.
Gideon. That's very true. I guess then you don't have to worry about the eyeballs.
Oh, good one. Or pupil. Yes, good. Yeah, good call. Right.
Mm-hmm. Although Gideon gets some pupils there. At the bottom of the page, we get to see his pupils. But
oh, yeah, look at that. There's blue eyes, piercing blue eyes. Mm.
I know.
Mm-hmm. Even who's back for pupil.
Yeah. We go back to Antarctica, and I guess it's S.H.I.E.L.D. has come in to check out the remains of the destruction. S.H.I.E.L.D., Commander Bridge, and this dude really does have a tiny head. Like, it's a tiny little head on a super inflated body. Like, I guess it's winter, so he needs a lot of packing, but
he's got one of those collars too, like Cable did. By the way, the character's name is George Washington Bridge, just so you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I vaguely remember him.
Are you kidding me?
No.
That's funny.
Yeah.
Alrighty, so...
would I kid you? Come on.
Never. Alright, so this scene is just to pretty much set up the fact that S.H.I.E.L.D. is opposed to Cable and X-Force. They are... they're not exactly on the same side. S.H.I.E.L.D. does not approve Cable's methods. And really, that's what this whole scene is saying. They're Commander Bridge wants to let Nick Fury know what's going on. And so they're going to phone Nick Fury. But we're going to go to the Adirondack Mountains, which is where the X-Force headquarters is. And in the headquarters, Cable and Cannonball are having a little discussion. Everybody seems to like their headquarters. It's all pretty cool, except the living quarters are a little small. They want their own rooms, but they're not getting their own rooms. I guess they have to have roommates and stuff. Aw, poor things. I guess it's easier to hook up if you have roommates. Makes for the little sexy subplots easier.
Yes.
Cannonball asks why they let the MILFs get away. We had them in the palm of our hand yesterday. Why did they let them get away?
Oh, good lord.
And Cable says, we severely crippled their operations and their manpower. To have tried to go beyond that would have jeopardized our unit more than I would have preferred. And Sam says, I wasn't sure you cared about us one way or the other. I do. But you held us back. Strife killing one of us the way he killed your son. And we get some backstory here. I don't know if this is new backstory or rehashing backstory, but Cable tells us about this young man named Tyler who wasn't exactly a son. He was like a son, a part of my soul, but not my body. We work together, much like I do with X-Force now. That, and after
that's
years,
a weir- so, very weird statement.
Apart. Yeah. Anyway, sounds a little lovey-dovey there.
Continue.
Mm-hmm. After a year or so, we drifted apart. He hooked up with Strife and the MILFs. And then what happened? He died during a terrorist operation. It was a position he was placed in by Strife. I have several reasons for wanting to see that armored maggot dead. Tyler's death is only one of them. You never told me any of this. Why?
You Wait a minute. Didn't you just say a couple pages ago that he knew his son had died?
Yeah, he did.
Okay. Sorry.
Yeah. Yeah.
But apparently, he thought his son was this Tyler guy.
Okay. Got it. Right, right. Okay, go on.
Yeah. So Sam walks away. They shake hands. And Domino comes down. Domino apparently knows more about Cable than anyone else.
Mm-hmm.
And she tells Sam to go to the workout that they are waiting for, and then she asks what the two beef bags were talking about. Mm, that's a lovely phrase.
Beef bags? Really?
Well, she's a strong woman. She's not going to let any guy tell her what to do.
Right.
I guess.
That's just a beef bag.
And while they are having a little chat, Cable is causing the instruments he's working with to float around and be mentally manipulated by him, I guess. And Domino's like, what do you think you're doing? If you're going to hold back on telling these kids everything there is to know about you, you'd better be prepared to sing like a canary if they catch you pulling stunts like that. Apparently, they're not supposed to know that he can make things float around. Cable says when it's time for them to learn, they'll learn. And she tells him, fine, just don't expect them to jump through hoops without barking once in a while. Their bark is nothing compared to my bite.
Oh, what the hell's Domino's story? I never did figure that out.
She has luck powers.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. I remember that now. Okay, cool.
Now, is she from Cable's...
Yeah, that's,
period.
She
or?
Obviously knows a lot about him.
She actually has a pretty rich story now. But at the time, she was introduced to New Mutants along with Cable, a couple issues after Cable, and she was an old associate of his. Which over the years, we learned more about that. She's also worked with Captain America and S.H.I.E.L.D. and
Wow.
She's been around.
So we flash over to the
Manhattan World Trade Center, where they are conducting the business takeover here. So Sunspot and Gideon are coming in to meet the Jankos, and they are planning to take over the Jankos Corporation or whatever. However, the Jankos have a trick up their sleeves. They call in Tom Cassidy, who is an old X-Man foe, I guess. Tom? Yeah. Banshee's cousin.
You would like Black Tom Cassidy, dude.
Yeah, I remember seeing some old, when he was first in there. He's cousins with Banshee, if I'm not mistaken.
You are not. Do they have similar powers or not at all?
No.
Okay.
He does something with that stick.
Gotcha. Yeah, he's holding a stick and kind of playing around with it.
He died of that mutant AIDS thing, whatever it was called.
Oh, the legacy virus?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Black Tom did?
Yes.
Did not know that.
Alrighty. So he is telling the two of them, he's telling Gideon and Sunspot there that the lovely lady here has requested the pleasure of my company to assure that she does not lose hers. In order to do that, we're going to need to extort scads of money from your respective corporations. So for the next few hours or days or weeks, you're going to be my unwilling guests. You can call yourselves my hostages. So they kind of walked into a trap there. They walked in thinking one thing, and they're not walking out because they're going to be little kidnapped pookie poos. And it looks like we finish off with Commander Bridge, Colonel Bridge, Commander. Commander Bridge is talking with Nick Fury, and Nick Fury says, do whatever you have to do, just bring the guy in. And Commander Bridge, he's got terrible fashion sense. He looks like an elf. He's got red vests, green pants,
it's not good, is it?
Nope. Anyway, they decide they're going to take down X-Force, and the only way they can do that is to contact Department K in the Canadian military, because they're going to call in Weapon X.
Dun-dun-dun!
Which I think means, of course, we're looking at Wolverine for issue 2.
Probably.
You say so. I don't remember.
Weapon X might have been... I don't know, that's a good question.
Either way... Cliffhanger, and that brings us to the end of X-Force number 1. There were a lot of pages in that book, I feel like.
It was $1.50 cover price, and it had with two-page spreads, it was somewhere in the neighborhood of 40 pages.
Yeah, it was a big issue. Yeah. I guess they weren't all that big.
But at $1.50, I mean all... I'll joke aside. I mean, what you get for $1.50 nowadays, you have to wait 3 months to get or wait for sale on Comixology for a buck. So,
Inflation. Yeah.
So that's it. That's X-Force 1. I would have to say, kind of. Blah.
Well, I mean, it was a big deal back then.
I guess it was. I missed it.
Except for, well, I don't know if I'm trying to remember if I thought it was cool back then, the art or not, but that last page showing Bridge, what a disproportionate, anatomy. It's ridiculous,
Again, it's just, looking at Liefeld's history in terms of art, if you look back on his Hawk and Dove stuff,
mm-hmm.
It was really consistent. It was really clean. It was not sketchy like this. And he needed to get faster, and so he cut corners. Now it'd be
that's what it looks like to me too.
Feet and backgrounds and inconsistency. I mean, you look at the size of Cable in one panel versus the size of Cable in another panel, and it's just there's no rhyme or reason to what how big this guy is. But, you know, again, his early stuff, I mean, the guy was freaking amazing at the beginning of his career. But then you look at his last issues, that latest series of Hawk and Dove when the New 52 kicked off.
Oh, good Lord, that was horrible.
It was really bad. It was really bad. And, you know, he let his ego get away with him, you know, get away.
Oh, dear Lord, yes.
But, you know, he, at least at this point in his career, he realized he needed the right for him. So he had Fabian in there, and Louise Simon said at one point, and the list goes on of people who worked with him.
Right.
This was fairly mediocre, this particular issue, though. In the dialogue, it did not, I you know, did not help.
No, well, it's, I don't know, it was the 90s. I mean, that seemed pretty typical to that era to me.
Is that right? Okay, I have to.
I mean, that's just my, I mean, you think about some of the other stuff that we looked at around that same time frame, it doesn't seem any different to me. But, you know, maybe I'm wrong.
You know what? Maybe you are.
I might be. You never know.
Throw down.
So, but anyway.
What is he, Fabian Nicias?
He might be. I don't know. He quit doing stuff because he's doing some kind of online thing. Mm. But it seems like he's helping again with DC stuff.
Well, he was writing the god awful Legion Lost. So.
Well, yeah, he started that, but he quit after a while.
Pretty early.
Yeah, that's when he said he had other things to do.
Mm.
So I'm looking at his entry right now.
He did.
Well, anyhow, so there's a reason why Liefeld has been reviled in the fan world. On the boards and so on and so forth. I don't think anybody deserves the kind of hate chase that he gets, but...
Well, it depends on who you are. I mean, what your experience is with him. I don't know. I remember his Levi Jeans ads. Remember that? You remember that?
Spike Lee.
Yeah, it was Spike Lee. Oh, man, that was something, wasn't it?
I remember when he was on Dennis Miller, when Dennis Miller had his first talk show post-Saturday Night Live.
Oh, yeah.
He came out and he gave all the audience members a copy of X-Force, Youngblood, number one.
Oh, joy. I think I got I did get a signed copy of that. I remember now. I have a signed copy of that. I waited in line for God knows how long.
So Murray, I think the lesson here is that you were much better off sticking with War of the Gods from DC than picking up X-Force from...
I would agree.
You betcha.
Not by much.
Gods.
Not by much, no.
Oh, come on. The art was like a billion times better.
Well, yes.
You know, I almost got the... omnibus they put out of this, and dear God, I'm glad I didn't.
Of X-Force?
Yeah, it came out February 2013. I saw some halfway cheap copies on eBay. The cover price was like 90 something, but I saw them for 30 or 40.
Yeah, you don't want to do that.
Yeah, I'm glad I didn't. It's just one of those things. I didn't read it, so, you know, something new. Because I've read almost everything that DC's ever put out. So.
Including never mind. Okay. Angel of Eight.
Yeah. I said almost, but yeah, I don't think I read that. But anyway.
Whatever.
Yeah.
Oh.
Well, that really doesn't have that much in it, does it? That omnibus.
All right, I got nothing else to add here.
I got nothing else either. We ready to wrap this up, gents?
Hey, Marie, thanks for taking us through that. I appreciate it.
Yeah, I do too, man. I do too.
It was a pleasure.
You've earned your stripes, man.
Yeah, you did. You did, man. That's something else, I have to admit. Oh, Lord. Okay. So, we ready to wrap this up?
Yeah, man.
All right. As always, you can send an email to podcast@talesfromthelongbox.com and let us know what you think. Give some comments, good or bad, if you feel like it. Maybe, hey, if issue that you want us to go through, have our certain brand of craziness on it, just give us a holler. We might even take requests. I don't know. We'll have to see. Depends on what it is. Anyway, and always you can check us out on our Facebook page and see what kind of stuff it is. And lately, Evan has been posting every single San Diego Comic-Con related news item in there and made my phone go off at 1 o'clock in the morning. It was great. And let's see, what else? Oh, yeah, comment on the actual episodes. It's all good in there and safe from spammers and all that good stuff, which you might be locked down too much. Maybe that's why I never get any comments. Anyway, that's about it here. The headache medicine is making me loopy, I think. Yeah. Anyway, that's about it. We are out.